looked down into her brown eyes and said, say a prayer for me. She threw her arms around him, whispered, God will keep us free. They could hear the riders coming. He said, this is my last fight. If they take me back to Texas, they won't take me back alive. No. There were seven Spanish angels at the altar of the sun. They were praying for our lover in the valley of the gun. When the bell stopped and the smoke cleared, there was thunder from the throne. And seven Spanish angels took another angel home.
And she reached down and picked the gun up that lay smoking in his hand.
If we look,
she said, Father, please forgive me. I can't make it without my man. And she knew the gun was empty, and she knew she could not win. But her final prayer was answered when the rifles fired again. There were seven Spanish angels at the altar of the sun. They were praying for the lovers in the valley of the gun. And when the battle stopped and the smoke lit, there was thunder from the throne. And seven Spanish angels took another angel home.
Yeah, my seven Spanish angels at the altar of the sun. They were praying for the lovers in the valley of the gun. When the battle stopped and the smoke cleared, there was thunder from the throne. And seven Spanish angels took another angel home.
Come on, Willie, help me with this thing.
There were seven Spanish angels
at the altar
of the sun.
Whoa, I believe they were praying
for the lovers.
Yeah, they was.
In the valley of the gun.
Well.
When the battle stopped and the smoke cleared,
there was thunder.
There was thunder from the throne.
Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network.
Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Survival Circle.
You have a weapon?
Yeah, a big one. How about you?
You sure you want to get cute with me? You have a backup weapon?
Never had the need.
Get one. Keep that in your suit unless I tell you to take it out. Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench on Survival Circle Radio Network, keeping you informed on guns, news, politics, guns, survival, preparedness, and guns. The tyrant is holding our country hostage, and our freedom is at stake. It's time to take a stand and tell the tyrant, we will not comply. Join me now in the never-ending fight against tyranny, right here on the Shooting Bench. Welcome to an early edition of the Shooting Bench. We're going to be sitting in for Amy tonight. She's still not with us. She probably won't be back until a week from tomorrow. She may drop in the chat room tonight. I haven't checked to see if she's in right now. She is not. She may be in later. So we'll get with you. We'll let you know if she drops. Oops, sorry about that. Okay, Memorial Day 2016. There's a lot going on, particularly if you're in Chicago. if you're headed to Chicago and you've been in Afghanistan, you might want to go back where it's safe. But there were so far, I'm sure tonight there'll be a few more. Let's see, at least 4 people dead, 13 people hurt as of early Monday, 1 person was killed, 24 wounded by Sunday morning, 3 more people killed, 12 injured on Friday through Saturday. And that's what's going on there in our very last state in the Union that got concealed carry there. I'll have to say, though, I think this has gone down substantially, and I don't know if it's as a result of the concealed carry. I would guess that it was. But let me go look here real quick. I didn't think about this. Let's see if we can figure out what the deaths were last year. Give me just a second here. Let's do 2014. All right, let's see what we come up with here. 12 killed, 43 wounded. That is, let's see, here is May 24th, 2014. Let's see, 2014, there were 6 killed, 22 wounded. 2015, 12 killed, 43 wounded. So, doesn't appear like it's getting a whole lot better in Chicago, but anyway, all right, for those of you that were with us Friday night, I think most of you were here. It was Liberty Lounge. If you weren't, We had the show interrupted early in the early, probably 30 minutes into the show or so, by a bear. No, really, a bear. Like brown, fuzzy claws, teeth, the whole nine yards there. Had to actually go out and kill a bear during the show. And then a good portion of the show Friday night was where I had on the air live phone calls back and forth, so I would have some record of what they told me. And so it, you know, usually when you kill a bear out of season, you need to be able to prove you know, quite a few things that it's okay. But it went real well. Game warden came and looked at it and said, well, obviously this is you didn't have any choice, so it's not a problem. The only problem was they wouldn't let me keep it. I love bear meat, especially young bear, and that one was nice and young. But he jumped right over the fence into the water trough in the goat pen, and I wound up having to poke a hole in him with a 22 Magnum. Excuse me, hang on just a minute here. Anyway, the game warden was very, very polite, very courteous, professional, and said that's fine, it's not a problem at all. I helped him load it up in his truck, and off it went. Charlie Brown, I don't know what they did with it. I would expect that they probably wasted it. I imagine that they went and, hey, Tampico, I would imagine they probably took it in and did some statistics on it, you know, teeth and age and weight and all that stuff, just for general principles so they can justify their existence here. But in the end, my guess is it went in the landfill or whatever they do with dead animals there. They have, in this state, and I hate it, but you can't, if it's out of season and you don't have a tag, there's no way you can keep your bear. How simple would it be if, I can kind of see their point. No, I can't either. How simple would it be just to say, hey, it was a justified, it was a good shoot, no problem. It was attacking your livestock. Game warden make a record of it, and you get to keep it. That would have been so easy to do. But no, they just had to take it. In some states, you can do that. You know, up in Idaho, I was on the call list up there. They just go down through the list and find somebody that wants it. Every time somebody hits a deer or an elk or whatever, you know, they take a report and they start calling people on this list. And first one that needs it and has time to come pick it up and wants it, well, you just come out there and pick it up and go, and it's the end of that. You get a little receipt to go with it, and that's all there is. In New Mexico, I stop and dispatched a young buck there one day. He'd been hit by a car. His back was broke. And called the game warden there in Lindrith, New Mexico. And I could have just drove off and left it, but hell, it was a young buck, and I probably lost 20% of the meat because of his injuries. But I called him. What they do is they say, okay, you make us an offer, and if the game warden accepts it, he writes you a receipt, and you get to keep the deer. So I bought the deer for $20. So that was worth it there. Rolex, they may have very well taken the hide and all that. I don't have any idea what they did with it. But I'll tell you, and I'll tell you the God's honest truth here. Who was it up here? I think it was Charlie Brown said, shoot, shovel, and shut up. I'm all about that. I've been there, done that before. But this one was a little unique. I didn't want to shoot, shovel, and shut up. I could have. But there's a couple of things. Number one, it happened during the radio show. How exciting is that? We had a ball with that. And number two, I killed it with a 22 Magnum. So shoot, shovel, and shut up, I wouldn't have been able to brag about killing it with a 22 Magnum. So, anyway, that's how that one went. If it would have been bigger, I probably would have might have just kept my mouth shut and drug it up in the garage and been done with it. But Anyway, that's what happened. All right, let me start bringing up my stories here. I got all kinds of stuff to go on. We had another discussion on hunting with a handgun on one of the forums that I go to. I won't get into that too much. We've spent quite a bit of time with it. But I just tell you, we get the same tired BS all the time from people that's never done it before. They don't believe I killed a deer at 112 yards with a 10 millimeter. They don't believe I killed a bear with a 22 Magnum. They don't believe anything because they've never done anything. Instead of saying, wow, I'll have to try that sometime and see, or anything, it's just, oh, you're lying. So, whatever. We try to document as many things. That's one reason Jason and I started out making so many videos back in the old days. And it was because of all the haters and all the naysayers out there saying that things couldn't be done, talking about the accuracy of Glocks. Well, it's not the most accurate handgun in the world, but it's way, way more accurate than the average person can shoot. So we started shooting at 200, 300, 500 yards with Glocks. And shot them underwater to prove another point. Shot them at 38 below zero to prove another point. Shot them when they were full of dirt, sand, gravel to prove another point. Did the same thing with the AK. And still not good enough. Anyway, this transgender thing, I think this is trans species. This story comes out of the UK. Hard to believe, but apparently it is true. I haven't verified this through other sources. I got it through Christian News. And apparently there are a certain number of people out there that identify as pets. And there's a... hang on here just a minute. There's a guy here who's got two of them on a leash, and they're people. They're men. They have a mask on. They're down on all fours. And this isn't transgender. This is trans species. And they identify as dogs. It's in the middle of all this other transgender stuff, here's a new thing. They dress up and behave like dogs. And there's a documentary coming out called The Secret Life of Human Pups. This is a real story. I'm looking at it here through, Newsweek, The Guardian, Huffington Post. There's two or three YouTube videos here. Tampa Leather Club. Boy, that sounds interesting. There's a whole bunch of stories here on human pups. So, you know, I'd feed them the same way. Well, here you go. It's been in the fridge for a while. You know, nobody else wants it, so I'll throw it on a plate out on the back porch, and that's your dinner. You want to act like an idiot? You can eat like an idiot. Says the documentary features a variety of English men who live like dogs in their private lives, a movement that often involves living with a handler, dressing in a rubber canine suit, barking to communicate, fetching balls, having your belly rubbed, now we're getting somewhere, and other dog-like behavior. In the UK, there are estimated to be 10,000 human pups, men who dress in elaborate dog suits and behave like dogs. Boy, just when you think it just couldn't have gotten any worse. So this remarkable documentary, I'm not sure I want to watch this remarkable documentary. And I'm not even sure I want to read any more of this story. This is a little bit... this is a little bit too weird, I think. But it is a verifiable phenomenon here. Life is getting more hectic nowadays, so much for pressure on work and life. Some people drink, there's drugs. You've got to be civilized in our society. When you're in puppy mode, all that goes away. We don't care about money. We don't care about what job we've got or a bigger car. Psychotherapists opine that the desire to belong in pup play circles may stem from childhood trauma. Please. I think with that, I think we'll just move on here. Talk about other things. Since it's Memorial Day, I want to clarify something. I think that each and every day of our lives, every waking moment, every day that we wake up and get up, that we should be thankful for those that have served, period, whether they made the ultimate sacrifice or whether they're still with us, doesn't matter. But there's a distinction between Memorial Day and Veterans Day, and a lot of people don't know the difference. Memorial Day to a large number of people is a day that you go out and get drunk and go boating and go fishing and all that and don't think for a minute. And even Ronald Reagan says it's a family holiday. I mean, you know, it should be family, but you still don't forget about what it's about. Memorial Day is for those that have made the ultimate sacrifice. It's not just because you've served. That's Veterans Day. Not that it's a bad thing to thank everybody that they've served. It's not that at all. It's just that you should know the difference. You know, if you know the difference and you still want to thank everybody for serving, there's not a thing in the world wrong with that. I just have a problem with too many people not having a clue what it's about. So, there's a... Let's see here. This is a holiday that's observed every year on the last Monday of May. And that changed, too. I think when I was a kid, if I'm not mistaken, I think that it was on the 31st of May, but I'm not positive. It was the 30th or something like that. I was pretty young, but I remember when it did change to the last Monday. And I believe it was the same year, the same act, that brought us President's Day and everything else happening on a Monday. But it originated as Decoration Day after the Civil War in 1868, when the Grand Army of the Republic, an organization of Union veterans founded in Decatur, Illinois, established it as a time for the nation to decorate the graves of Union war dead with flowers. By the 20th century, competing Union and Confederate holiday traditions celebrated on different days had merged, and Memorial Day eventually extended to honor all Americans who died while in military service. Typically marks the start of the summer vacation, while Labor Day marks the end. And there's a whole bunch more that goes along with that, but anyway, and I think most of our shooting bench listeners are pretty knowledgeable about that. We go through this every year, and again on Veterans Day, but that's just me. That's how I do things. One of my pet peeves here. Yakima Glock, corner, son. Everybody else knows I'm going to be live. Here you come dragging in 30 minutes late. So, no, I'm just kidding. Glad to have you in here. Who all we got from Washington in here tonight? Tampico Scout, I believe U.S. Kitty, Yakima Glock, Eddie Crump. And I think that's the extent of our Georgia contingent. I mean, Charlie Brown from Georgia. I think that's the extent of our Washington contingent tonight. By the way, for those of you that may be listening for a first time or been a while, be sure and join us in Yakima, Washington, excuse me, on the 17th, 18th, and 19th for the LFA Arms Expo and Preparedness Fair. I will be up there. I'm kind of struggling to make it right now, but I have every intention of being there if I can. And 2 days after the expo, now the expo to begin with, what brought this about was the passage of I-594 in I think December 13th of 2014. That was when we had the big rally in Olympia, which I also attended. and we began the I Will Not Comply movement. And that was the time when they all of your private transfers had to be firearms had to be recorded and done through a dealer. It didn't go over well. People didn't like it. So we committed about 4,000 or 5,000 felonies that day between all of us. About 2,500 patriots showed up for this huge freaking rally. And that was 6 months later, we had the first Arms Expo, which we traded and sold lots of guns without the transfers and everything, without the legal transfers. And then we've got it happening, same thing happening again this year. And 2 days after the expo, on the 21st of June, I'll be offering a Counter-Strike class also in Yakima. Counter-Strike class is a hand-to-hand class for everyone. You don't have to be, by any remote stretch of the imagination, in any type of physical condition. This is for everybody. This is for those people that think that they don't have a chance, the people that probably don't have a chance because they don't know and don't try. So this one is not for the aspiring martial artist. You're not going to get a black belt out of this in 6 hours. What you're going to get is confidence, knowledge, the ability to get out of a tight spot. You're not there to destroy five bad guys at once. If you don't carry a gun, then there's other things that you can do. If you live or work in a non-permissive environment, which doesn't allow you to carry a gun legally, and it's too risky to do it, the penalties is too high to risk it, then there's other things that you need to look at. And that's what Counter-Strike is for. And then 3 days after that, on the 24th, I think it is, 24th, 25th, and 26th, will be a 3-day personal defense handgun class, personal defense handgun 3, with a night shoot that will be held in Marble, Washington, about 3 hours or so north of Yakima. And that class is a lot of fun. We've done it up there. Let's see, we did PDH-2 up there the first year and PDH-3 last year, and we're taking 3 back up there again this year. So the lot of stuff going on up there this year. And then in New Mexico, over in Santa Fe County, New Mexico, it's north and east of Albuquerque. This will be on, I believe it's July 8th, 9th, and 10th. We'll be doing personal defense handgun 3 again with a lot of the New Mexico gun owners group over there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I always like to do classes over in that neck of the woods anyway. I've done several over there. We've been playing quite a bit with our Bofang radios this weekend. And I tell you, the more I use those things, the more I love them. For the money, you can't touch that deal. We had a friend of mine, you guys know him too, is Edge of the Woods, was over about halfway between Springerville, Arizona, and Clamato, New Mexico, out there in the middle of the desert. And he was able to reach, believe it or not, a repeater right here about 10 miles from my house. And we sat out there on our little Bofangs and talked like we had good sense. And we managed to learn quite a bit that's going to help us out in a poop hit the fan situation. And that's exactly why we were doing this, to find out at what area, what point over there in his neck of the woods would we be able to make contact, providing the repeaters and the, you know, the grid's still up and running. If it's not, then we'll have to make other arrangements, but that's what's going on right now. So with all that, I'll be back here in just a minute.
Like the burning end of a midnight cigarette, she broke his heart. He spent his whole life trying to forget. We watched him drink his pain away a little at a time, but he never could get drunk enough to get her off his mind. Till the night he put that bottle to his head and pulled the trigger and finally drank away her memory. Life is short, but this time it was bigger than the strength he had to get up off his knees. Found him with his face down in the pillow, with a note that said, I love her till I die. And when we buried him beneath the willow, the angel sang a whiskey lullaby. La 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 la.
As no other people on earth. It was because here in this land We unleash the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. Each one of those markers is a monument to the kind of hero I spoke of earlier. Their lives ended in places called Belleau Wood, the Argonne, Omaha Beach, Salerno, and halfway around the world on Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Porkchop Hill, the Chosin Reservoir, and in 100 rice paddies and jungles of a place called Vietnam. Under one such marker lies a young man, Martin Treptow, who left his job in a small town barber shop in 1917 to go to France with the famed Rainbow Division. There on the Western Front, he was killed trying to carry a message between battalions under heavy artillery fire. We're told that on his body was found a diary. On the flyleaf, under the heading My Pledge, he had written these words: America must win this war. Therefore, I will work, I will save, I will sacrifice, I will endure. I will fight cheerfully and do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended on me alone. We must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. It is a weapon our adversaries in today's world do not have. It is a weapon that we as Americans do have. Let that be understood by those who practice terrorism and prey upon their neighbors. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
All right, I'm back. Sorry about that. I had to step outside for a minute. I had a neighbor come up. All that, I played that a little bit prematurely before I wanted to, but nevertheless, I'm here. So, all right, let's move on. Let me check my chat room, see what went on here while I was gone. And looks like Charlie Brown's going to have to leave us. Pretty late out there in his neck of the woods, but I... Yakima Glock, no, I didn't have to shoot another bear this time. I don't know what all I've killed during this show. Horned coyote and bear and I think that's it probably, but anyway. Charlie Brown, I'm not sure. I need to check on something here. I'm not sure that the way you've reported that is completely correct up there about Cascadia Rising. I'll check on that during the next break and let you know, but I'm not sure that that's entirely true. I'll check it out though. You know, I was looking at the we'll talk about that when I get back or after the next break. I got to get a couple of things before we do that, but it's interesting stuff about this 22 Magnum that I kind of did some comparisons here over the last couple of days, just from all the all the discussion that's come up here because of the bear. Anyway, let's get to Henderson, Kentucky. Did you guys see this on the news or on Facebook? Where some anal orifice run through a whole damn bunch of Memorial Day crosses in a is a Memorial Day cross display. It was in Central Park. Not Central Park in wherever, but it was in Henderson, Kentucky. And mowed down 160 crosses. Altogether, this display contained over 5,000 crosses. Everyone had the name of a Henderson resident who had served in the military. I think that is pretty amazing. Pretty amazing display there. Pretty neat. And anyway, some idiot drove through it. Drove all the way through this thing. Knocked down 160 crosses. Now, the most of them were salvageable. They put most of them back up. And they got a bunch of volunteers and had everything up and running and back where it was supposed to be by today. So that was good, and I appreciate people that put that kind of effort and time and volunteer into volunteering their services for things like this. What I don't understand and what I don't appreciate is why anybody would do such a thing. If you're not... into that, maybe you're completely against all war and all soldiers and all this and that and the other, but I guess maybe I could see some people's desire to want to do something like that, although I would very strongly disagree with that desire. But nothing, generally speaking, nothing is wrong until you act on something. And if he hates soldiers and sit there and say, I ought to drive through this display, and I think, well, that's okay until he does it. But even if you could somehow understand the reasons why someone would do something like that, I don't understand why somebody would want to hurt so many other people, embarrass himself, humiliate his own family, friends. I don't know. The whole thing is just absurd to me. I just can't even believe it. He tried to deny it. They caught him not too long after that, and he tried to deny it, but it was there was too much stuff in the wheels, in the tires, in the grill. it was hopeless for him to try to get out of that. But the Tampico Scout, I could do it with a 308 or something next time, I guess. But, man, that seems like such a waste, and the 22 Magnum works so well. I was looking at, well, I keep saying that. We'll get to that in a little bit. I've got another break thing to do here in a little while. So. We are going for an additional hour tonight, or till our regular time anyway. I guess the proper way to put it is that we started early. So let me drag out my trusty storyteller here and see what else we got to share with you for right now. Interesting deal here in Paris going on, and I didn't get a chance to watch the video, but I guess there's apparently the news media is blacking all this out, but apparently there is some really serious riots. Just France has turned into a war zone there, and or not France, but Paris. And this is all between Muslims and the French citizens. And this is not the only place in the world that this is going on. But it says that the French and Western news media are intentionally blacking out ferocious riots in Paris, refusing to provide any coverage of violence by savage Muslim beasts in Paris. Hundreds of Parisians have been attacked and seriously injured by roving bands of Islamic radicals, throwing stones, spears, smashing store and car windows, setting fire to anything they can. Riot police are gassing the wild hordes to no effect. So, I don't know what... And that appears to be the story in several places in Europe right now. And there is a surefire cure for that. And I would say that gas is probably not it. There are other ways to get your point across more directly, more sincerely, and more permanently. And I am all for that type of action, if that were to take place, or I'd be all right with that. All right, let me go back over here real quick and look at the chat room and see what's going on. All right. By the way, there's something else that I wanted to mention here. Let me bring that up, because I've got a whole brand new thing that I forgot to mention the other day. Actually, I may not have known about all of it in time, but I do know about all of it now. So, and Tampico Scout, if I don't want to share anything that I shouldn't. I can share the story, but I think it's pretty all right. You tell me on the chat room that it's okay to use the name. Well, I know it is. It's on Facebook. Forget it. Scout, go back to sleep. It's all right. Our very own Eddie Crump works for I guess he still does, I'm not sure, for an outfit there in Washington. And Eddie was dismissed the other day. Not completely, at least not yet, I don't think. He was told to go home for a couple of reasons. He had written in the dust on the side of his truck, his filthy truck, it looks just like mine. He wrote it in there, very nice square block letters. It looked really, really professional in there. It almost looked like a sign. And it had, let's see, I don't know if I can see it in this picture. Yeah, I can. The federal government murdered Lavoie Finicum. Has that written on one door there. Has his American flag upside down, sticking in the steak pocket of the truck. And he's wearing a shirt that says, better to die on your feet than to live on your knees. He got wrote up for all of that. They evidently are very non-political there, and they didn't like the message on the truck, they didn't like the message on the shirt, and they didn't like the flag being upside down. All of which were, I would think, now I can't say protected by the First Amendment, because there's, when you're on private property and you have policies and stuff, First Amendment is not really an issue if you're not dealing with the government. You know, if you're on their property and going by their policies. However, I am perfectly okay with everything that Eddie did. With one exception, and since Eddie's in there now, I want to share this with everybody. From the way it appears in the picture, how the flag is displayed on the truck. Now, we have policies that we are, you know, guidelines, United States code that we follow for flag, whether it's upside down or not. There are certain ways you need to display it. And there's a couple of things, Eddie, that if it were me, I think I would change a little bit. And I'm perfectly... You know, I can't say that I'm not with you on the upside down thing, because I flew mine upside down over my business two different times, and the first time was probably close to a year. It probably was a year, somewhere between 9 months and a year. It's quite a while, and that caused some problems. We got things in the newspaper. We got people saying they'd never do business with us and all that, and I said, well, it's okay. And we left it that way until Clinton was out of office, because we thought things were bad then. If I'd have known what was to come, there's no way I'd have put the flag upside down then. I'd have saved that message for now. But the other time, and this was a lot of write-up about this, when I had the Southwest Shooting Authority in Farmington, New Mexico, We flew it upside down, very prominent, right on Main Street, big flag. And, boy, we caught all kinds of grief for that, too. Death threats. Unbelievable what these people do. But it was in the paper, quite a deal there. So, Yakima Glock, thank you for posting that there about Cascadia Rising. Appreciate that. So, but there's two other parts of the code there. And, okay, now I just got another picture in. If that is, in fact, how they were flying. Oh, okay, I got it. Okay, if you're going to fly a flag, like the one thing that you need to remember is the flag is not supposed to touch anything underneath it. It's supposed to fly freely, and it's not supposed to be resting against the side of anything unless it is like hanging on a wall or something. If it's on a pole, on a flagpole. Why in the world would this guy call me right now? If it's on a flagpole, it's not supposed to be touching anything but flying freely. And the other thing is, in that same section, this is in Title 4, United States Code, Section 8, Subsection B, and Subsection E, it says that the flag should never be fastened, displayed, used, or stored in such a way, in such a manner as to permit it to be easily torn, soiled, or damaged in any way. So just make sure that when you fly that flag at any time, it's never okay. I had an argument with the guy one time. I said, well, at least they're flying it. Well, you know, I had a difference of opinion there. I have to, had to agree to disagree, but there is no at least they're flying it. You fly it right, and you fly it by the guidelines that we have, or don't fly it at all. And we had a guy that had laid it flat on the roof of a house, and according to the way it was displayed, it was not correct. We had one in Belen, New Mexico. I don't remember what the name of the company was, but it was a big company, huge flag on the side of a building, and it was hanging not upside down, but backwards. And that's just a matter of just ignorance. I mean, just not knowing what the right way was. And I'll tell you what the most astounding display of that was, and I think I mentioned it on the show here before. And that was in Fulda, Germany. I went in to the first time I'd ever been in the gym over there. I never did on my free time. I run a lot and I did a lot of stuff, but I never went to the gym. And thank you, Eddie. Mm-hmm. And so I walked into the gym one day primarily because Top was our first sergeant was in there, and I went to talk to him for some reason. And We know that Rolex. I walked in, and the first thing that I saw, and it's like it could be on fire, and it wouldn't have caught my eye any faster. I'm the self-appointed flag police anywhere I go. And I walked in. This was in the gym on an army base in Fulda, Germany. The sergeant major and my first sergeant went to this gym every freaking day. Whether it was for 30 minutes or 4 hours, they went every day. This is the post sergeant major, and my first sergeant went every day. First thing I noticed when I walked through the door, that the flag was on the far back wall right in front of the door. First thing you see when you walk in, the flag was hanging backwards. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I could not believe what I was seeing. And I walked up and told the first sergeant there what I had witnessed there. And he was just embarrassed to death. He stopped everything, went and got a small detail of people and equipment and stuff, and went up there and got that changed right there within, 15 minutes after that. But if you're going to fly it right. Check the United States Code. Everything that you need to know is in Title 4 of the United States Code. and pretty cut and dried, pretty clear. You know, you don't wear shirts made out of a flag. Now, there's also a difference here of things that are made out of red, white, and blue bunting with stars on it. That doesn't mean that it was ever a flag. One of the things that people went berserk about back when Obama was first running was this flag that had it resembled the United States flag with the red and white stripes. And in the blue field up there was his picture. As disgusting and sickening as that was to see that picture on something that looked like a flag, it was not illegal. It was never a United States flag. It was a flag that somebody made with red, white, and blue stripes and a turd over in the blue field over on the left. And that's not illegal. It's not anything. It means nothing. It was never a flag. If they'd taken a United States flag and took a picture of him and sewn it or stapled it into the blue field, that would be a completely different thing. It would be illegal. And as disgusting as it was to me to see that, it was not technically a problem. So we need to make sure... people are with this flag just like we are on certain Facebook posts and stories and stuff. They hear something or see something and it agrees with them. They say, well, that's I think that ought to be right, and they go and post it without checking it. We just had another major thing like that on Facebook here over this weekend. And guys, we don't want to lower ourselves to their level. Verify it. Make sure it's right. Cross-check it in more than one source. Make sure it's correct. And when you're sure and you can confirm it, then post the hell out of it. Share it everywhere if it's something that, news that needs to get out. Otherwise, if you're not sure, leave it alone. Let somebody else make the mess out of it. All right, I'll be back in a minute.
Criminals prefer an unarmed public. Our nation's worst crime statistics and most horrific recent events have taken place in areas that are known to be no-carry zones for law-abiding citizens. There's a reason schools make such good targets for gun violence. Only the criminal will be armed.
I had to settle because then I noticed he had Mr. Brady up here who was hit not with an assault weapon but with a .22 caliber revolver. So getting beyond that.
It's about the weapons, the guns. Where did the killer get them?
They're shocked at how easy it is to purchase a gun.
It is simply too easy to obtain a firearm.
While the gun is considered an instrument of war by many, to me, it is clearly an instrument of peace and of liberty. The gun promotes peace in the hands of peaceful people. The gun has no mind of its own, it has no morals, and it has no conscience. In the same moment that the gun takes a life, it can be saving one and not be able to distinguish the difference. The gun and its use, for good or for evil, is solely at the discretion of its bearer.
It took me a good 45 seconds to realize that this man... he wasn't there to commit a robbery. He wasn't there for a hit. He was there to simply shoot as many people as he possibly could.
Gun levels the playing field when confronted by larger men, armed men, multiple attackers, and tyrannical governments. The right of self-preservation, the right to possess that gun, was afforded me by my maker and is non-negotiable. It is not up for consideration or discussion by any man or group of men on this earth. The right to bear arms is what protects my other rights, and considering the source of that right, it cannot and will not be taken away or disguised as some watered-down compromise. stripes that man is born with, and it has been that way since the dawn of time. The Constitution of the United States enumerates those rights for us, and the protection that it affords us is comforting. However, the Constitution has been ignored, gagged, whisked away to an office full of men that have taken pleasure in violating her, leaving her torn and bleeding, unable to help herself. People that were appointed stewards over her have been neglectful. They have been lured into complacency and have inadvertently turned a blind eye towards this criminal act. We, the people, have been distracted. We were promised safety and protection by the very men that have perpetrated this vile deed. Without the support and protection of free men, dedicated, patriotic Americans, the Constitution is truly nothing more than a piece of paper.
Remember real clear years ago in the swamps of South Georgia, cane pole and crossman in my hands, all I needed to be growed up. Homemade ice cream and barbecue and the family on Friday nights. 10-lane ram on Saturday, right before the morning light. Came a time I was old enough and I learned about the gun. And every night at supper time I answered what I'd done. Hooks today, but forgot about the way it used to be. They got no respect and no cold steel, just games on TV. I burn in hell before I sell my rights away from me. It's high time we embrace the tool that keeps all men free.
We have a message for those that would take our guns away, whomever they may be, from whatever country, whatever unconstitutional faction they may belong to. Please understand that we have had everything taken from us that we are willing to surrender. Some of us have been shooting since before many of you were born. Many of us were trained by the same people that trained you. And some of us, through years of experience, know tricks that they haven't taught you yet. Think of your families and your future with them as we have done. We have decided that our future and that of our children cannot and will not be without freedom. We are willing to die to defend those God-given rights if need be. The question that each of you must ask yourselves, are you willing to die to take them away?
From Hillary Clinton, from Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, from a whole gaggle of numbnuts who would try to tell me they will dictate where, how, and if I can defend myself. I find that preposterous. I find it unacceptable, and I will not accept it. I am a free man. Don't tread on me.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. Okay, we're back, and there's before we move into something else, while we're still talking about the flag and all of this, I wanted to commend Eddie for standing his ground, risking his job. Nobody, especially at this point in time, wants to risk losing a job. But Eddie didn't back down. They said, change the shirt and get all that squared away or go home. He said, all right, have a nice day. Yeah, I'll be at home if you need me. And walked off. So good job, brother. I'm happy. Happy to know you. Happy you did that. That's I wouldn't have expected anything less of you. Okay, let me, I was trying to find a deal here. Well, don't worry about it. I'll find it later. Doc said up there, and I agree 100% with what he said, and, but there's we need to discuss that a little bit. He said he's not trying to be argumentative, but a lot of people think the 223 is marginal on larger game. Well, it all boils down to shot placement. And I'm not trying to be argumentative either, but you know, the 223 is not an elk gun. Will it kill an elk? Absolutely. 100% of the time, if you put the bullet in the right spot. Now, we talked the other night about shooting that bear, getting that 22 Magnum bullet. The energy, people say, well, it hadn't got enough energy. What's energy got to do with it? It doesn't matter how much energy it has. What matters is whether it's got enough penetration to get to whatever it is you're trying to shoot, brain, heart, spine, whatever, and that the bullet will expand and perform and do what it was supposed to do. So energy is irrelevant. You can take, remember I shot that deer, well, most of you weren't with me back then, but that was back in 2007, 2008. I shot that little mule deer buck with a 10 millimeter at 112 yards, and the bullet did an admirable job internally and then exited the other side. So what did energy accomplish for me? I lost most of it on the other side of the animal. It went on down range somewhere and no telling where. So I remember so many deer that I killed when I was a kid with a 30-30, and almost 100% of those bullets I could find just under the skin on the off side. That's perfect. It could not possibly get any better. Why do people want to get the 7mm magnums and the whatevers? Will it kill them? Oh, sure will. Does a mighty fine job. But the 30-30 expended every ounce of its energy in the deer. Killed them like a lightning bolt. Just about every time. And if you take a 50 caliber machine gun with, you know, 10,000 pounds of energy or somewhere in that neighborhood, and it's a full metal jacketed bullet, and you shoot a deer right behind the front shoulder, if you don't hit the heart, he's just going to go on his merry way, because that bullet's going to expend 9,997 pounds of its energy somewhere 2 or 3 miles downrange. So it's not a matter that energy didn't kill that bear the other night. Shot placement killed the bear. A good quality expanding bullet went in there. That bear walked about 15 feet and tipped over. It couldn't have been any better. I think they wrote a song like that once. I couldn't have killed him any faster if I'd have shot. I mean, the only way I could have would be to shot him in the head. So is the 22 Magnum a bear gun now? Not in your wildest fantasies. Not even. Neither is a 223 an elk gun or a moose gun. But I know people that will that have taken deer and. I know a guy that hunts moose every single year with a 30-30 and gets them. I know a guy in St. Mary's, Idaho that hunts bear all the time with a 223 and has for years. He never loses his bear. But you have to put the bullet in the right place. If you can, Doc may have seen this. I have never seen it, but I've talked to a lot of people when I was in the service, people that I trust, people that I don't think would lead me wrong, that have seen 50 caliber bullets hit little small Oriental guys that were 5 foot nothing, and if it didn't hit bone or something solid, it went on through and they just kept going like nothing had ever happened. Now, quite naturally, if it hits spine, shoulder blade, femur, something like that, then obviously it's going to be a whole different effect. Because with that much energy and speed, then bone fragments are going to go everywhere, but that's not bullet performance. That just happens to be what the bullet did if it got to the right, if it hit the right place there. Sheriff H is with us tonight. Good to see you, brother. Been keeping up with you on Facebook. You're doing a damn fine job. Looking forward to you being our new sheriff there. Sheriff H is running for sheriff in the neighboring county here. I wish he was running in my county. I may have to move back over to Navajo County, but he's doing a great job. So back in, and Sheriff H is another one with a very commendable service record, and he's been there, done that, along with Doc and Tampico Scout and several others. I think Rolex has been there. And so we were talking about, I don't know if you, how much of the story you, discussion you heard, Sheriff. We were talking about energy versus shot placement and things such as that. And that bear killed the other night with the .22 Magnum, I was talking about just putting the bullet in the right place. And it's not a big game gun, but I suspect that it would kill every single thing in North America and kill it dead rapidly if you put the bullet in the right place. A .22 is not a deer gun either, but I've killed more deer with a .22 than most of y'all probably ever seen. And I never lost. Well, I did lose one. That's a long story. I'll have to tell you that sometime. I didn't lose it because it got away. I lost it because it fell in a place that I couldn't find, and I didn't find it till the next morning, and it was too late by then. So, but other than that, but that does not make the .22 a deer gun. You know, back in the old days. Actually, not even really all that long ago. Prior to 1935, the most powerful handgun in the world was a Colt Walker. And the 45 Colt was it. But look at all the 44 40s and 38 40s and 41 PEM fires and 45, 41 rim fires and the 41 long Colt and the 41 short Colt. And all these had very anemic ballistics. But by the standards in those days, they were okay. That's on account of they didn't have anything to compare it to. They didn't have a 10 millimeter. They didn't have 357 Magnum until 1935. They didn't have the 40 Smith & Wesson or the 44 Magnum or anything like that. So that's what they had, and it worked, and it fed people for generations. And things have just kept getting better. But all of a sudden now when the 30-30, when it first came out, it was the most remarkable accomplishment in long arms in the history of mankind. There was nothing that would touch the 30-30 for the different chores that it was in that class of rifle anyway. And all of a sudden when they started inventing all these other cartridges, now all of a sudden the 30-30 is not big enough for anything. The 357 Magnum is not big enough for anything anymore. Even though Colonel Wesson killed a moose with one shot, he killed, what all did he get? I think he got a polar bear with a 357 Magnum. He got a grizzly bear with the 357 Magnum. And now it's too little for anything. They tell you, well, it's marginal on whitetail. My aching ass. Whitetail are like German shepherds in most parts of the country. Get up around Pennsylvania and up in northern Idaho, there's some pretty good sized ones up there. But all over the south, you know, Oklahoma on down, those, if you kill one that weighs 100 pounds on the hoof, you got a monster. And you tell me a .357 Magnum isn't big enough? I just killed a 125-pound bear with a .22 Magnum Friday night, and a .357 Magnum wouldn't have done that? You know, I think the same thing that has happened to our to mankind, to the we had put a story up there about alpha males the other day. And, you know, about the feminization of the American male. I think that's happening in firearms, too. I argue with people all the time, oh, you can't do that. It's unethical. It's not humane. Shut up. How many have you killed? And what did you use? You know, these guys, I saw people down in Georgia constantly, 7mm Magnum shooting out of a tree stand at 75-pound whitetails 50 yards away. Man, they could have done that with a .22 pistol and done a fine job. Yeah, Scout's been there and done that, and I have every reason to believe that everything. I've been around Scout quite a bit, and that .30-30, man. A guy armed with a .30-30 and plenty of ammunition is well armed. Well armed. Matter of fact, the .30-30 for a while was a United States Army rifle, and up in the Cody Museum, I mean the Winchester Museum in Cody, Wyoming, they've got a couple of examples of Winchester Model 94s with bayonet lugs on them. Now, we'll get into the lever action benefits here, as opposed to some of the other in the bolt actions and whatnot. One thing about a lever action that's so cool is you don't always have the most powerful cartridge, but you've got the ability to shoot very, very rapidly if you know how to shoot it. And the thing that is even, it's kind of better than an AK or an AR or whatever, is that you can continue to load that as you're shooting, so to speak. I mean, you can do a tactical reload by just shoving one in the loading gate, and if something happens and you just have to drop your ammo and pull the trigger, you can do that. Every other gun out there, if you go to reload it, you have to take it out of battery. Or rifles, anyway. Well, some of the pumps, you can do the same thing. But your bolt action, you have to take the gun completely out of battery to reload it. Even if it's magazine fed, you take the old magazine out and go to put another one in, and somebody jumps over the fence in a frontal assault here, you've got one round. It's in the chamber. With the lever action, however many is in the gun, you just keep stuffing it in there whenever you happen to get a minute and keep that gun topped off. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Guy that knows how to use it can sure do a fine job with it. See what's going on here. Rolex, I think that would do the job. 40mm, yeah. Yeah, I think 40mm would be a fine deer gun. That's I'm not sure how much you're planning on eating with it, but yeah, it would work fine. I did kill a deer one time in Marlin, Texas. There was a young buck right next to the fence there on the highway. Of course, it wasn't entirely legal because I was shooting out of the window of the pickup, but. Took two shots, knocked him down with the first one, went over and finished him off with the second one, and that was with a Ruger single six, .22 long rifle. So I don't try to encourage people ever to choose a .22 Magnum for a bear gun or a .30-30 for a moose gun. Or anything like that. All I'm saying is that if you are sportsman enough, if you are ethical, and you're a good shot, place that shot well. All I'm saying is that it will work. It will work well. It will work 100% of the time if you will do your share of the work. I'm not interested in hunting deer all the time with a 22, but just because of circumstances about 100 times, that was the best choice. And the 22 Magnum is the, under those same circumstances, is the very best that you can get for the purposes we were using it for. Anyhow, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. So, give me... I'm just looking at the chat room here. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the North American Arms bunch there. Not a tall. Matter of fact, you couldn't run fast enough to give me one. Come right down to it. But if y'all want to shoot them, y'all want to play with them, that's okay. They are toys at best, if you ask me. But anyway. So hang on here, and I'll be back in a minute.
My name is John Q. Public, and I am a member in good standing of an organization called America, and I have a message for those agencies and agents that work under the auspices of the Department of Justice. You have called me many things in the past, rebel, right-wing extremist, domestic terrorist, to name a few, but that is not important. What I'm about to tell you is... There must be accountability in all things, sooner or later. When you sin, however big or small, you will be held accountable, either in this life or the next. When you invade people's privacy, violate their rights, steal property, break up families, and hurt people, the time is fast approaching that you will be held accountable both in this life and the next. You and I took the same oath, administered by the same people. We both swore to protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Some of you actually feel that you honor that oath, but you violate it each time you force a young girl to her bedroom floor in nothing but her underwear and hold her there at gunpoint. Or when you shoot or stomp a family pet to death, or shoot a young boy down in cold blood in the mountains of Idaho, or incinerate over 70 innocent people in a church in Texas. Warriors indeed. How dare you call me a domestic terrorist? I go to work every day, sometimes at two jobs to make ends meet. I attend church every Sunday that I'm not working. As difficult as it is, I try to make time each day for my kids. I teach them about the Constitution and the Golden Rule. I have extra food and supplies to help myself and others through hard times. I try as hard as I can to obey the ever-increasing number of laws that are forced upon us, and I pay my fair share of taxes. I have a gun to protect myself and my family against those who would do us harm. I shouldn't have to use it to protect us against you. In fact, your organization is not even authorized by the Constitution and shouldn't be here, but since you are here, let's talk about your job description and performance. We have common enemies, you and I, that we should be united in fighting. The Founding Fathers never intended for us to fight each other. We should be as one. The current us-against-them attitude should never have been allowed to rear its ugly head. Division is unhealthy for the country. You will undoubtedly conduct more unconstitutional invasions of homes and businesses, and more innocent people will be injured or killed. A dairy in Pennsylvania, a rabbit grower in Kansas, a gun shop in New Mexico. It may even be me and my family. But let me make one thing abundantly clear. We, the people, have grown weary of living in fear. We're tired of being treated like animals. If you continue to follow the path that you are on, the time may come when you will not find us waiting to be descended upon when we least expect it. We may come to you. We outnumber you 1,000 to 1, and the same people that trained you trained many of us. We, the people, are becoming aware of those numbers.
One day, you will launch one of your cowardly sneak attacks on an unsuspecting young family in Idaho, and instead of your brave sniper finding a defenseless, unarmed woman holding a baby in her arms, he may find that the tables have been turned. One day, instead of terrorizing and destroying another American family in retribution for a trivial infraction of an unconstitutional law, instead of shooting down defenseless children or young veterans that are trying only to live the American dream, you may find patriots waiting for you that have been pushed to their limit. One day, you will find that you have awakened a sleeping giant, and we the people will indeed hold you accountable for your evil deeds. Hundreds of men, women, and children have died at your hand because of poor information, no information, or just plain overzealous, out-of-control power freaks on an adrenaline high that have no regard for human life. Agents that think their badge is a license to kill with impunity. The difference between you and us is that we will not harm your family as long as they stay out of the fight. I don't want your family to go through what you have put many of ours through. Yes, they will be sad if you don't come home, but when the grieving is over, they will come to understand that you simply chose the wrong side. You see, this is nothing more than a conflict between good and evil. It's that simple, but this is not how it is supposed to be. This is not the America that the Founding Fathers entrusted us with. I implore each of you, before you go to work tomorrow, to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and see if you truly like what you see. If you can look at yourself and be proud of what you've done, or what you may be called upon to do, or more importantly, if you feel that you can walk uprightly before God and look Him in the eye and feel justified in what you have done, then we have nothing further to discuss. But some of you are not really jackbooted thugs. Some of you are simply misguided and feel that you really are doing the right thing. To you, I say, please, follow your conscience, do what you know in your heart is right, for we the people will hold you accountable. Welcome back to another segment of The Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back again. While we were talking about ballistics and everything, I was looking up a couple of deals here, and this is that silly muzzle energy thing that people refer to so much, which means absolutely nothing. The only way you can use muzzle energy to make any comparisons to anything is when you're using bullets of the same diameter. The formula for figuring muzzle energy does not include the diameter, which is ridiculous to me. So you have weight, speed, and let's see, what is it? Yeah, weight and speed, I think, is all it is. So if you use this muzzle energy thing, if you go back to the 223 where we were talking about a while ago, it has, with a 55 grain bullet at 3,200 feet a second or somewhere thereabouts, it has about the same, maybe a little bit more muzzle energy than a 44 Magnum with a 240 grain bullet at 1,400 feet a second or so. So does that make the 223 as good of a choice for elk as a 44 Magnum? No, actually it doesn't. Now we can get back into the same argument. Will it work? Probably yes, it will. But shot placement would have to be different. So if you look at the 22 Magnum, the 22 Magnum with a 30 grain bullet, let's go with a 40 grain bullet. No, let's go with a 30 grain bullet. It's faster. The 30 grain bullet has just a hair over, out of a rifle, has just a hair over 300 foot-pounds of energy. This is that same stupid energy formula we're using. If a 38 special, standard, not plus P's, just standard 38 special out of a 2-inch barrel is 225 pounds of muzzle energy. So we've got over 75, 80, 90 pounds more energy out of a 22 Magnum than you do the 38 special out of a 2-inch barrel. You will exceed that just a little bit when you go up to a plus P out of a 4-inch barrel, then you'll get more energy than a 22 Magnum. So that whole energy thing is ridiculous. So we go back, I think we've talked before sometime back about the Taylor factor. If you want to use the Taylor factor, that is a very accurate way of comparing the striking force, not necessarily bullet performance, but the striking force, the energy of, thank you, Sheriff, of any particular bullet. And that, in that manner, you can actually compare a 22 Magnum to a 460 Weatherby Magnum, or a 38 Special to a 577 Nitro, or a 30-06 or whatever, because you're also including the diameter. All you do is simply multiply diameter times weight times speed. That's diameter in thousandths of an inch times weight in grains times speed in feet per second, and divide it by 7,000, and that is the Taylor factor. The number is relative. It's not pounds, it's not grams, it's not anything. It's just a relative number. But that way you can compare. If you do that, now you find that the 223, remember a while ago we compared the 223 and the 44 Magnum, both at around 1,000 feet a second. I'm sorry, 1,000 foot-pounds of energy. So if you use the Taylor factor, now we find out that the 223 is less than 6, and the 44 Magnum is about, if I remember right, it's about 22, 24, something like that, which is very near the same as a 30-06. Now that is striking force, its energy, it's how hard it hits. It is how it will swing a ballistic pendulum. You hang a piece of steel out there, then you'll find that the 44 Magnum and the 30-06, providing that neither one of them penetrated the plate, will swing it about the same distance, where the 223 will ring it and make a little noise, and if you're watching real close, it might move it a little bit, where the 44 Magnum will spin it round and round, yet they both have 1,000 feet a second, 1,000 foot-pounds of energy. How is that possible? It's possible because that formula is horse crap, that's why. If you want to compare and find out how things compare. Let me go back to a story that I wrote for the Wyoming State Legislature one time, trying to get some things changed with bullet performance and stuff. If you, in that story, I'll have to find it for you sometime, but let's see, let me see what Doc's talking about here. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. In that story, I said if you have a BB, now I'm talking a BB like out of a BB gun, 177,000 steel BB that weighs like a half or a third of 1 grain or something like that. And no, it's a little more than that. I think it's more like three or four or five grains. And shoot that at 16,000 feet per second, you'll have almost exactly the same energy as a 180-grain 30-06 at 2,600 feet per second. So is this BB adequate for elk when it's the same energy as the 30-06? Short answer? No. Long answer? Hell no. People get all their panties in a wad and get all excited over this energy crap. You know, you need to just eliminate that from your vocabulary, except when you're talking to people that don't know any better and trying to explain it to them. Otherwise, don't use it. It means nothing. It's null and void. The Taylor factor will do it for you. Rolex, let's see, what about the 22 for 223 ballistic tip? I'm not sure what you're asking me there. What about the 22 for the 223 ballistic tip? Are you talking about for the Taylor factor or energy or what? I'm not sure what you mean. Clarify that just a little bit, and I'll see if I can baffle you with my BS there with some kind of an answer for you. Let's see. If you use you lost me again. A skidded with 500 BB in and pointed to the deer. Okay, let's ponder on that one. Doc says low velocity handgun rounds benefit greatly from large bore diameters, and I'm a big fan, and I think Doc is too, of the bigger, slower bullet. Unless you're hunting varmints, you know, prairie dogs and coyotes and stuff out there, I'm not all that big a fan of the high velocity stuff. Matter of fact, the absolute most accurate 223 round that I ever loaded in my life was like 2,800 feet a second out of a 26-inch barrel. I mean, I cut 400 feet a second off of that, maybe five. But I'll tell you one thing, it would shoot 136 thousandths of an inch with a three-shot group at 100 yards, and it never would do that with anything else that I tried. It always shot well, but it didn't shoot that damn well. And I did that twice in a row on the same day with that. So, if you use a skillet with 500 BBs in it and point it at the deer. Yeah, the AMAX. Now, I've got pictures. I don't know if I can go and get that. It's similar to that AMAX. They do rip up meat. Now, this is what the whole discussion is about. This is what we're all centered around right here, is the type of bullet that you use. It doesn't matter the energy. Let me go see if I can find that picture, because I had that. Oh, I can get it right here. By golly, I left it up. How awesome am I? All right, let's see if I can do this here. I may have to refresh this page. But I'm going to show you a deer that my son shot when he was 11 years old. Used a 30-30. And this would kind of similar to what you're talking about, Rolex, with that AMAX bullet. This was not an AMAX, but it was the accelerator, not the accelerator. What did they call that round by Hornady? What was it? Anyway, I'll think of it in a minute. But here is, let me go and finally put these in order here. I'll show you what that bullet did. I can put these in the chat room, I believe, here. I just gotta be able to go back and forth here. My son was so tickled. 11 years old. And 100 yards from the truck. He missed the same deer. He didn't miss it. He didn't shoot. I kept saying, shoot, son, shoot. He's right there. He's 40 yards away. For some reason, it was buck fever. He'd never killed a deer before, so he was a little excited. So he let it go. And then just before dark, he found the same buck exactly 100 yards from the truck. and had his little 30-30 with these, what were these Hornadies? They had the, not accelerators, those were the sub-caliber ones. The, they had the rubber-tipped bullets. What the hell were they? I'll look in the chat room. One of you's probably come up with it by now. I don't know why I can't think of it. Let's see. Here is... Here we go. Now, here's the deer. It's important that you watch the progression of the story here. This was the deer as soon as he put him down. And he's kneeling beside it with his little single shot 30-30. He was real good with that. Matter of fact, I think he's still got that. I'm not sure. He's 10 years older now. The it wasn't the XTP. It wasn't the VMAX. It wasn't any of those. It was a only in a couple of different rounds. 30-30 was the most popular. All right, see if that, let me know if that picture came up. I don't see it on my end. And I'll, let me try it again here. I'm still not seeing it. Maybe it's coming up for you guys. I won't post it again. All right, that is... Looks pretty normal right there as far as just... shooting a deer and laying on the ground. It looks pretty normal. This next one here is, as I was hung it up and was trying to skin it. Now look at this one. The skin literally, yeah, Lever Evolution. Thank you, Yakima Glock. Yeah, Lever Evolution. That's what it was. Yeah. The idea of this was a great idea. It was a good concept, but the bullet sucked. It was fast. It expanded violently, and it was just not worth a damn for deer. It would have been a better coyote bullet. I got one more picture to show you of this same deer. Now this next one was what we didn't save from the carcass. We had one shoulder that was completely destroyed. If that would have been a conventional 30-30, it would have been fine. It might have broke the shoulder, but at that low velocity, it could often break the shoulder and not ruin more than a cup full of meat, you know, blood shoot it so it wouldn't, you know, wasn't desirable. But, this is the carcass. After we got everything off of it, pretty much we could use. And I believe, I'll have to check, I think we cut the back straps and everything out of this. But that's what that carcass looked like. It's, obviously you can see the neck of the deer is to the right and pointing up there. And you can see the bruising goes all the way back. That front shoulder on that side was completely destroyed. It was obliterated. They took the perfect deer round and made it perfectly suck. If that would have been a conventional 30-30 with 150, 170 grain bullet, we would have eaten every ounce of it except for, you know, just a little bit, or even if it hit the bone, because it is the perfect deer round. But look at the bruising, goes almost all the way back. You can see this carcass was the next day. When it got daylight the next day. That bruising is almost all the way back on the left-hand side to within, it's over probably close to 80% the width of the picture there. You can see heavy dark purple bruising towards the rear of that carcass. That's what the Lever Evolution does to a young whitetail buck. Hopefully that picture showed here. Try it again. Well, I'm assuming it did, so. And Yakima Glock, they did the same thing. Yeah, that's a solution to a non-existent problem. They did the same thing with that idiotic judge and the governor. Those are not self-defense rounds. And the 410, quote-unquote, self-defense rounds that they designed specifically for that handgun are not self-defense rounds, but they sold the hell out of them because they told everybody they were, and because they're Winchester, they know everything, and people just follow them. Oh, yeah, Winchester said it's the greatest thing in the world. Yeah, well, Hornady said that bullet was the greatest thing in the world, too, but it ain't. Not for deer. So, anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to that one, too. All right, let's see here. Let me get my 2 cents up here again. I think we've about worn out the 223. I mean the 22 Magnum stuff here. There it comes. All right, I don't have a lot of time left, so let me pick out a couple of good ones. Do you know that the shooting, Shooting Illustrated? Yeah, Shooting Illustrated. The final public edition, the final newsstand edition of Shooting Illustrated that has been around for so many years, coming out right now. It is the June issue of Shooting Illustrated. Will be the final issue available on newsstands forever, and it's featuring that I don't like this one either, the Ruger American pistol. I don't like it anyway. Interesting, that gun, that publication's been around for I don't know how long. I don't know, it probably says in this story somewhere. Well, it probably does, but I can't find it. Anyway, it's only going to be available now if you signed up for an NRA membership or online. That's going to be the only way to do it. Interesting. Going the way of the Pontiac here. And we were talking about flags earlier and flag etiquette and what you're supposed to do with them. Everything. There's a teenager here, and you know, there's not a whole lot of teenagers that will. I mean, there's a whole lot of teenagers, but there's not a whole lot of teenagers that will do what this guy did. He was a resident of Ohio. And say his son stopped what he was doing a week ago Sunday to make sure that Old Glory was not disrespected. This kid, Cole Dotson, 18 years old, noticed the flag outside Putnam County School had fallen to the ground. And most kids nowadays say, oh, well, it's too bad about that. But he stood with the flag, holding it off the ground until someone from the school got there. This was Advantage Career Center in Van Wert, Ohio. Grew up in a military family, plans to serve. Good for him. God bless you, son. And here's what he wrote in Facebook after it started making headlines. He said, it makes me proud. Thank you all for the support. I didn't intend to get recognized for what I did, but I'm sure glad to see the support and respect for the flag. I love this flag and this country, and God bless America. This picture has been shared 60,000 times at the time that I got this story. And, hey, D. Schutz just joined us. Glad to see you in there, my friend. Let's see. Rolex says there, I haven't went and looked. I guess I ought to. Rolex says there's quite a bit of powder and primers on the market right now. I probably better go check on that, because we've only got a few months, and you guys know as well as I do, if it goes the wrong way, then it's going to be Katie bar the door when it comes to getting powder, primers, guns, ammo, anything that goes bang or whatever. This is the neatest little story of road rage here. Florida man tossed an alligator into a, I guess it wasn't road rage, but anyway, it was a, tossed it into the Wendy's drive-thru when he said he intended to be a prank, as he has been ordered to stay away from all the business's location and animals until his case, which includes a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, armed with an alligator, is finalized. He said on October 11th, 2015, Joshua James allegedly threw a 3.5-foot alligator through a drive-thru window after receiving his drink order. He was arrested in February by U.S. Marshals. U.S. Marshals? What the hell U.S. Marshals got? Oh, I know what it is. Probably, maybe, because the alligator... No, alligators I don't think are protected anymore. So why was U.S. Marshals involved in this? Now faces charges of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and unlawful possession and transportation of an alligator. I guess that's it. That's what the U.S., that's what the federal charge is right there. The attorney of the gator boy maintained the incident was a prank during his initial appearance. He agreed to an open plea and will be sentenced May 31st. So, anyway. You know, pranks, these things have consequences, man. That's all I can tell you. It may be funny. Seem like it's funny, but sometimes not so much. I had a guy brought an alligator into Dixie Drive Ice House in Houston, Texas one time. A little bitty alligator. It was only like 14 inches long, maybe a little over a foot. I'd never been around an alligator before. I didn't know they were that damn strong. I was about half lit, and I was playing with this alligator and stuck my finger down there, and he latched onto it, son. I didn't know what I was going to do. I couldn't get the damn thing off of me. And it didn't break the bone, but he sure broke the skin. And it got infected. Good grief. It was bad news. So I've learned not to stick my finger in alligator's mouth because of that. But anyway. Okay. Well, I'm not saying that everything I did back in those days was smart, all right? Jeez, give me a break. All right, well, I think I'm going to ease on out of here. And get ready for... Got a lot of things to do to get ready for tomorrow. And I want to tell everybody here... you guys may not have... I don't know if I've shared this with you or not. But those Glock dry practice kits that I make are now available in 3 different trigger pull weights. 2 different models. And I just sold 25 of them to the 75th Rangers in Fort Benning. And I sold 130 of them to, I'm assuming it was Rangers, it was a special ops email address in Fort Bragg earlier this year. And they're going pretty well. And I just have reposted those up on the website, trying to get caught up here. But if you're a Glock shooter, then jump on it. The Rolex, what do you want to talk about? I've run out of things to talk about here. We can, anyway, I've got a granddaughter here I need to take care of. So save your questions and stuff, and we'll hit it again tomorrow. I don't think, Sheriff, glad you joined us in there. D, glad you dropped in there. And Yakima Glock, that's a good idea. Make a note to yourself. Do not put finger in alligator's mouth. Great idea. So, all right. Well, let me get out of this screen here. I got to get my auto DJ up and running here. Well, I'll find it in a minute. All right, guys. I will see you all tomorrow. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you then. Hang on a minute. All right, there we go.
Broker Ace was born to race. He had a mean streak 2 feet wide. A son of a gun with a taste for fun and more than his share of pride. Take a dirt road curve with the devil's nerve, make a car dance across the mud, and haul and shine with his regular line till the track got in his blood. He was a real hot shot and he bragged a lot, but man, that fool could drive.
You've been listening to The Shooting Bench. Tune in Monday through Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to midnight Eastern for the most politically incorrect show on talk radio.
Mama, lock your daughters up, that's why our bunch is back in town. And them little girls get frisky when they hear that race car sound. There's a horse slick on the inside and a wreck along the rail. You better stand on the stroker, cause a bandit's on your tail.
Tune in again on Fridays at the same time for 2 hours of classic country music on Liberty Lounge.
It's a downright joy for a country boy when he hears them engines moan. But you gotta hang tough and it gets real rough when you're out there on your own. Cause they'll push you around, they'll knock you down.
And catch Living Away Out Here with me, Amy Reynolds, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern for the only good news out there. Trivia, stories, tips, hints, and fun on Living Away Out Here. Right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Stroker, get your dander up, this ain't no time to lag. You got to make a lap up if you're gonna take that checkered flag. Number 10 is closing in to even up the score. It's time to wave bye-bye, put the pedal on the floor. You better stand on the stroker, cause you're blowing off their door. Blow the doors off, Stroker. Stand.